Choke points. It is time to catch up on Sound Transit. There's been a lot of news, good and bad, for Sound Transit over the last few weeks, and Chris is back to get us up to date.
All right, I'm going to start out with the good news. Light rail trains have started making the trip between the U District and Northgate. You might have noticed the trains on the elevated tracks approaching the Northgate station this week. These are the first test trains to run the tracks as Sound Transit prepares to open the line to the public in September. Sound Transit says this expansion is opening on time and on budget. But the budget elsewhere is not in good shape. We've been reporting for years that the Linwood extension that's expected to open in 2023 has been running $500 million over budget. The cost of buying property and the alignment blew original estimates away. Sound Transit now says it has eaten those costs and absorbed them, so it's no longer an issue. But the same thing is now happening for the extensions to West Seattle, Ballard, and Tacoma. Skyrocketing property values being blamed for nearly $6 billion worth of increases in costs.
Wow.
For those expansions. Yeah, that's six with a B.
Of course, that goes to property owners, right? So it goes into people's pockets.
Well, you would hope so, yes. Or to the agencies or the county, you know, the municipalities that own the property there. So the expansion to West Seattle and Ballard are up by $5 billion combined. The Tacoma expansion, about $1 billion over budget. So Sound Transit's board will have some very tough decisions to make on alignments this year, whether to build more tunnels on these projects, run the trains at grade, where the stations are going to be placed, how many stations can they afford to have, things like that. An independent consultant will be scouring the books next month and report back to the Sound Transit board in April. The one overarching concern, though, in Sound Transit right now, not necessarily money, is when will people return to transit out of this pandemic? We've been talking about this all along. I mean, will they ever come back in the numbers forecasted? Sound Transit ridership is still off more than 80% as of the end of November. CEO Peter Rogoff told a group earlier this month that riders need to realize that trains and buses are safe as long as people are masked up and following the rules.
There's a lot of, frankly, mythology out there indicating that transit is somehow a super spreader venue or something along those lines. The data is really quite different, and especially if we have universal mask use.
There have been some national studies that suggest transit is safe, but it's going to take a lot more than a couple of studies to regain confidence from riders. Rogoff says he hopes that all local transit agencies will come together this year for a PR campaign to push the safety of their trains and buses.
As the lid comes off a little bit in terms of what the state advises us to do on staying home, probably a coordinated marketing plan on the part of the transit providers in the region to get people back and to understand that it is safe to come back.
Not sure where these agencies are going to find the money for an ad campaign when they're all still bleeding money. Farebox revenue isn't coming in. Sales tax revenue still not coming in because of the pandemic. Sound Transit said last year that it expects a $6 to $12 billion shortfall in forecasted revenue over the next 20 years, which takes us out through the life of ST3, and that it could be out of cash by the end of this year. The agency gets 50% of its funding from the sales tax revenues. Now, all the projects that are currently under contract, like the expansions to Linwood, Bellevue, Redmond, Federal Way, those are not going to be impacted by the expected shortfall, and they are still on schedule to operate since they are already under contract.
Yeah, well, just as we're wondering whether we need as many road projects now that people aren't driving as much, it may just keep working from home. Do you need as extensive a rapid transit system?
Yeah, that's the one thing that the people continue to ask. I mean, I asked Claudia Balducci of, you know, from the King County Council, when they opened the Bellevue Tunnel last year, like, when this opens in 3 or 4 years, is this going to be outmoded because no one needs it? She's still bullish. Yeah. That the riders will come back, and also the fact that they believe that this is also a very good kind of chariot of the people, you know, for lower income folks who need transit. And, right. If you can get some people like that from the Linwood area, they still believe they will come when this is finished. But yeah, that's a big X factor, and it's really hard to plan and make any financial calculations when you really don't know when or if that's going to happen.
Chris Sullivan. Thank you, Chris. A coffee maker in King County is helping young people get out of homelessness and onto a better path. And with that story, here's Cairo Radio's Miley Katie.
Street Bean Coffee Roasters in King County is on a mission to do more than just make coffee. The nonprofit makes dreams come true for young people struggling to find their way.
We exist to do job training for youth and young adults that are in homelessness, trying to exit homelessness.
The nonprofit's Sean McDonald says they not only help build job skills, they help build bright futures by connecting people to work opportunities. As with many good Seattle stories, the inspiration for the nonprofit came from coffee.
Linda and Ron Ruthrup started Street Bean a little over 10 years ago now, and they really were seeing the landscape of Seattle and the coffee industry that was really booming here, and saw the kind of the job market that was opening in that, and thought, wow, a coffee shop would be such a great way to help employ young people and get them really tangible job skills.
He says early on,
it was really more of a mentoring program. It started just with a few young people at a time, and we've developed our program now to be able to accommodate up to 30 young people a year.
The program is a paid apprenticeship.
It's a stipend program, and so it's designed that way to help them build job skills and get paid, but also it helps if it's a stipend program as an apprentice, then they don't have to pay taxes initially, and so it helps them kind of just pocket more dollars to save to get into housing and to get the kind of necessary things they would need for long-term stable living.
Now they've helped hundreds of young people gain crucial skills and gain control of their lives. That's why Bonneville, Seattle, the Seattle Seahawks, and Carter Subaru, Volkswagen, and now Acura are proud to honor Street Bean Coffee Roasters as our Charity of the Month.
You can find out more by searching Charity of the Month, MyNorthwest.com, and you'll get a list of all our monthly charity programs right there, and you can decide who you want to contribute to, which is a good thing to do. And with state lawmakers focusing most of their attention on things like equity and COVID relief, a lot of the usual issues like gun safety haven't been getting much attention, but that's about to change. Here's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
Renee Hopkins with the Washington-based Alliance for Gun Responsibility made their position clear last month.
In terms of our agenda this year, we really can't afford to press pause on the work that we're doing. We need to ensure that our communities are safe from preventable gun violence as we recover from the pandemic.
Priority bills included a couple of big policies, but in the first couple of weeks of this legislative session, as most of us have been focused on things like COVID relief and police reforms, several proposals have been dropped that would mark a significant policy change in our state should they pass, and now they're getting some attention from the gun rights groups.
Honestly, I don't know that the firearms community is aware of all of this legislation that they're facing.
Dave Workman with thegunmag.com says the targeting of state preemption, which bars cities and counties from passing any gun restrictions that go beyond what the state has on the books and has been a constant thorn in the side of places like Seattle, is a battle cry for most gun owners.
The alarm bells went off, and I think that when the word of that one starts to circulate, I think that word is going to circulate pretty fast, because Washington is not the only state facing this sort of legislation. There's also a bill in Oregon and in Florida. So it looks to me to be a concerted effort on the part of gun control and gun prohibition lobbying groups across the country to do away with state preemption.
A proposal from Representative Hackney and Macri would repeal state preemption.
The problem with conflicting local ordinances is that they enable anti-gun city administrations to entrap people. That's really what it boils down to. And quite frankly, people who favor that kind of patchwork legislation don't really respect that the owning of a firearm is protected by a right. It's a right protected by both the state and federal constitutions.
And Workman says,
and you can't manage a right differently in one jurisdiction than you do in another jurisdiction, especially in neighboring jurisdictions.
Another area of concern for gun owners?
We really have to stop the intimidation through the open carry of firearms. And this is one of the most alarming trends that we've seen, the increase in armed vigilante activity and threats with firearms.
Hopkins talking about the proposal to limit open carry, specifically at protests. But Workman says that infringes on the rights of gun owners.
I may or may not agree with the idea of 800 people showing up down at the Capitol with AR-15s slung over their shoulders. But I can tell you this, in all the times that I've been down to Olympia, covering these protests and these rallies on the Capitol steps, and there have been a lot of people down there with AR-15s or other types of semi-automatic rifles. Nobody's been hurt. Nobody's been shot. No, there hasn't been really an incident. And when you have a rally of sportsmen and gun owners, I guarantee you there's going to be a firearm or two in that crowd.
And we also have a couple of bills filed to, once again, target so-called high-capacity magazines. And these proposals limit magazines to no more than 10 rounds, plenty to defend oneself, according to supporters. But Workman says gun owners don't see it that way. A couple of other bills have also now dropped that I was not expecting this session, including a fresh effort to ban so-called assault weapons.
They want to ban specific types of firearms simply because they are black, maybe. They look menacing. It's an easy target because not everybody owns one, but enough people own them.
So, Hannah, tell me, are gun owners comfortable with the idea of, I don't know, 200 people showing up to an angry protest, each one of them armed with a semi-automatic rifle?
It depends on the gun owner, you know. It depends on, you know, there are gun owners that's why they're there. They feel that their rights are going to be infringed upon now. There's a big concern because of the way this last election shook out, right? So now at the state level, we've got Democratic control across the board. At the national level, same. And we've had the comments from Joe Biden about, the various policies that he supports going into the Second Amendment area. So there is this very big concern, and there's this, especially as we saw here in the state, there's a lot of bills that have been dropped, including this proposal on the assault weapons ban that nobody really expected and have kind of been dropped under the radar. So they do see this as kind of a coordinated effort. So those folks, they would support, absolutely. But as you heard Dave Workman say there, he doesn't necessarily support that and understands that it could be, you know, a dangerous situation. So
well, isn't that what forced this issue? A bunch of people walking around looking like cowboys or, you know, like armed militia members. And for whatever reason, sometimes when you see that in a city, I mean, yeah, in eastern Washington, if you're headed out to the, you know, the happy hunting grounds, fine. But if you're shopping in downtown Seattle, seeing a bunch of people armed up is disconcerting. So isn't there, in fact, a difference between the way you feel when you see this in a city and when you see it in the country?
Yes, I would say yes. But there's definitely that, you know, if you're down there to rally and protest because you feel that your rights, your gun rights are threatened, you're going to bring your gun. That's what we've done here always. That's what Dave was trying to explain there, is that that's what these folks do. And they would see that as an infringement on their rights to protest and rally.
That helping? You can demonstrate for your gun rights without arming up and making people feel just the opposite, saying, okay, if this is what gun rights mean, then I really don't like them.
I would agree with you. Look, and I just know that not everyone is going to agree with that, and that they want to be out there. The other thing is, look, we had protests down here in Olympia just in the last 6-8 weeks where back-to-back weekends somebody was shot during demonstrations. So it is a legitimate concern about having weapons in these places. The end of state preemption, as we've talked about, I think every year I've been on the air with you, that is seen as a very big deal. Nobody expected that this session on the gun rights side. So, and nobody knows about it, I don't think. So I think that you're going to see some significant pushback. What I can tell you is that gun owners are worried about what the current political climate means for them. There is a huge, huge increase in gun sales and a massive ammo shortage. You are hard pressed to find ammunition, and you have been for some time. And that's because people think that their gun rights are going to get taken away.
Yeah. Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
The Daily Dose of Kindness is sponsored by Mike Novak and listwithnovak.com. Many people took time to celebrate Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In Rhode Island, a community center dedicated to his legacy had a lot to celebrate this week. A longtime friend of the center made a sizable and unusual donation that will help people for years to come. CBS's Rob Nesbitt has the story.
It was a busy holiday at the community center, offering a breakfast and lunch to more than 300 clients who were all happy to hear about a sizable donation. Executive Director Heather Holstrout says that Monday's drive-through food drive had a big part in that.
We raised about 5,000 pounds of non-perishable food brought in by all different members of our community.
She's used to food donations, but nothing prepared her for the largest donation made in the center's history. Newport local and longtime friend of the center, Jane Mead Timken, called in November to make that happen.
Jane told us that she wanted to give us her house.
As hard as that was to believe, this home was transferred into the name of the community center. 5 days after being put on the market, the home was under contract for full asking price.
$1.7 million was what we got for the sale of the house, and that money will be really helping the future of Newport County and the MLK Center for generations to come.
The money from the sale has been put into an endowment, according to Holstrout, made possible by a woman who takes the quotes and teachings of Dr. King to heart, putting her community's needs above her own.
She really is a person who only wanted us to tell this story, not because she wants a pat on the back or accolades from people, but because she wants to inspire others to do similar things.
Reporting in Newport, I'm Rob Nesbitt, 12 News.
Lots of many unique donations out there, just a few ideas.
Now, from the Gian Ursula Show, G. Scott with this exclusive look at what they'll be talking about today. Were you surprised about the Antifa demonstration downtown last night?
No, not at all. And now that it's happened, now that those can really see, you know, I know that during a time, and I know there's still going to be talking heads across the country that's going to say, see, the Black Lives Matter. Why are they doing that to their neighborhood? When you could see that clearly the same folks that continue to do the same things over and over and over and to destruction, it just ends up happening. And so the end result should be, and should always be, arrest them.
Yes.
It's not rocket science right here, what we're dealing with, but it's always about who it is. Like, who's doing this? Is it Antifa? Is it right-wing militias? I don't care who it is. They need to go to jail. That's what they need to do. Because guess what? If I leave out of here right now and I go up the street to the AMPM and I start breaking glass and busting windows, wouldn't the average American want me arrested? Mm-hmm. Yes! It's not rocket science. And when did we become a country that we don't arrest people that bust glass windows and things?
Right. Well,
let's get back to reality.
Two or three people were arrested, G. So maybe the 2 to 3 people who were smashing glass were arrested. However, those that burned the American flag were not. They lost me. I saw that image of the spray paint that says abolish everything, and I just scoffed. I was like, what does it even mean, right? Like, if you're going to have these big demonstrations where you burn a flag and you smash windows, at least have a cohesive message, abolish everything. To me, it's just, it's like an itch you can't scratch. Just stop, you know?
I get it. I went to school. You went to school. Y'all, everybody has gone to school. When we went to school, if there's one thing that we can look back on, is we can look back on the cafeteria. Just take a look at that cafeteria. Envision in the back of your mind what your cafeteria looked like. You can see it. There's all the kids in the cafeteria, and you had different crowds, right? You had different, and there was always that one crowd that was down for whatever. They was ready to tear up the school at any moment's notice. No problem at all.
They so usually wore those leather wristbands with spikes on them, right?
Now, Colleen,
stomper shoes and the. Yeah.
I want the record to reflect.
Please. In high school, we all have types, okay? I was a cheerleader, so I have been stereotyped as well.
All right. Okay. Dave, which one were you, bruh?
I carried a slide rule. So you know what happened to me.
Head down. Did you have a briefcase, Dave? Did you carry a briefcase in high school?
I had a briefcase. I had sixth grade. It was the seventh grade. Dad made me wear a tie.
Dave.
I had to salute everybody in the gym class in the locker room. They snapped the jock strap. I mean, you name it.
Dave,
only if you were spoken to.
Dave, did you like dodgeball in gym class?
I was meat in dodgeball.
So, G, don't get on me about the leather wristband with spikes, okay? I can call it.
This visual that Dave just did, Colleen, just threw us all off because Dave, right?
Now, I want to go back in time and
protect never
Dave.
Complained about it, but I will tell you the truth if you ask. That's all.
Did you ever get a wedgie, bruh?
No. I'm not sure what they called it then, but I got my shirt loop pulled all the time.
Oh, Dave!
Yeah.
No. But let me. I will say this, though, Dave. had you and I been going to school together during that time,
yeah,
you would have been my friend, and I would have made sure nobody messed with me.
Same.
See, that's what I needed. That's what I needed.
Yeah.
I figured my 4.0 GPA was the best.
That's why to this day, when I had a hard time financially and I was struggling, hey, I got some friends that really did well for themselves that I protected when I was younger.
You.
They looked out for you, boy.
Yeah.
Well, we're here now, Dave.
Yeah, yes, thank you. Thanks for the protection.
Well, let's just hope that this subsides, and let's just hope that there's nobody that agrees with abolishing everything and trying to get rid of all rules. And look, you can protest and you can have things that you believe in, no doubt about it. But when it starts causing harm to other people, and especially, I mean, you're talking about during a pandemic right now, too. I mean, folks are already struggling, right? So we want to just make it even rougher. That's not cool.
Yeah. G. Scott joins Ursula at 9 o'clock here on Cairo Radio. Thanks, G.
Yep.
State lawmakers in Olympia are making good on promises to get that vital economic aid package on the fast track. Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott says that will include rent relief.
We've already seen some quick movement on proposals to help the unemployed and the businesses that have to pay unemployment insurance taxes that are going to skyrocket without help to refill the trust fund. Proposals that could actually come up for an initial chamber vote fairly soon. One of the other major priorities is what to do for renters and landlords.
Once the governor's eviction moratorium expires, which it is currently scheduled to expire on March 31st, the status quo law would technically allow for an immediate eviction filings on over 100,000 Washington households.
Democratic Representative Nicole Macri.
Most other people, unless they live in a city that has a good cause eviction ordinance, most other tenants who are in month-to-month rentals could receive only 20 days notice to end their tenancy.
And Macri says that can absolutely happen under current law, a situation the pandemic has only made worse that could explode without some change.
A lot of times landlords will ask tenants to sign a new lease when they increase the rent. But because there essentially has been a freeze on the rent because of the governor's eviction moratorium, a lot of fixed-term leases have lapsed and people have moved to month-to-month tenancies where the conditions of your lease can continue. Most leases say this can roll into month-to-month. But once you're in month to month, then the landlord in most cities, except for four, can just give you 20 days notice and just ask you to leave. And that is totally legal.
And
I have a bill. It's House Bill 1236. It would end no cause evictions in Washington state. It's a bill I've worked on for the last 3 years. And it's even more urgent now in light of COVID.
For instance,
given the continuing pandemic and the continuing need for people to have a safe place to live and for the public health of all of us, taking away that uncertainty and making sure that tenants are only asked to leave when there is a legitimate business reason.
So here's what that means.
11 legitimate business reasons why landlords could end a tenancy. And it would be very similar to good cause ordinances that we already have in cities like Seattle, Burien, Auburn, and Federal Way, making sure that tenants are only asked to leave when there is a legitimate business reason, like the landlord's going to sell the property or the landlord themselves are going to move back into the property, or they're going to renovate it.
Now, some landlord groups have concerns about this, but others have worked with Macri and her team on getting this legislation going. Now, as for all of the back rent many landlords are owed right now,
we added a section to the bill around rental debt accrued during the pandemic due to COVID-related hardships. So that could be increased expenses due to COVID, like a medical emergency, or you had to take additional family members in because they were displaced, or it could mean loss of income. We know that many thousands of people in Washington have lost their jobs through the pandemic. So there is a provision that provides people with COVID-related rental debt additional time to work on a repayment plan before a landlord could seek an eviction.
And
we'll see some action in the legislature in the next couple of weeks that it will be include some focus on getting rent assistance dollars out to tenants and landlords. And then there is this bill, House Bill 1277, that looks at creating a state fund specifically for rent assistance.
Okay, so the landlords are still owed the money, but if the tenant can't pay, the state will supplement those payments?
So that's one of the proposals would be this. It's a real estate document add-on, $100 for every document when you buy or sell your house. And that's where that fund would come from for that rental assistance. Republicans have their own proposal that I'm actually just getting as we speak that comes from somewhere else. And that both of those will be up for some hearings next week. So we'll see a little bit more about them. But that would be the idea. And then also gives some more time for dealing, you know, coming up with a payment plan to deal with that, essentially. But that's the key, right, is that we hear rent relief and everybody thinks that has to do with the tenants, only the tenants. And it's not just the tenants, because that's rent that then goes to the landlord, right? So that would be the ideal. And there's some federal dollars that they're going to leverage as well. So there's definitely some help coming. There's going to be a lot more help needed, though, I think.
Right. And on the other end, for landlords who are having to make mortgage payments so they can continue ownership of the house, what's there to help them?
That, again, if they get their rent with these rent relief programs, is supposed to help. And there's been some local efforts there where we've had King County has a really good rental relief program now that pays a good portion of the rent to the landlord if people get qualified for that. But there's, again, going to need to be more than that. So I think you'll see more of that, and also in some budget bills. These are quick action items that are going to come up, as she said there, early in the session.
Okay, now for the businesses, business end of this, explain the unemployment tax problem here, which is going to be a considerable cost to some businesses.
So the unemployment insurance rate, which is what is generally charged to people who own their businesses to fill up our unemployment trust fund, which is how you pay out unemployment payments, you know, got decimated by the pandemic with such a huge increase in the number of people who are unemployed. And the way that it's a very complicated formula, but the way it works is essentially that the more people you as a business owner pay out unemployment to because you've laid them off or whatever, they don't work for you anymore, then the higher the tax rate you're going to pay. Well, it's by no fault of the employers at all this time around. They're getting dinged for all this huge increase, which it was like astronomical for small businesses. I think it was normally they paid like $400 a month. And then this was going to go up to like $10,000. It was just a huge increase. Yeah, it was huge, depending on which formula you landed in. So there's relief. And I know Nicole Jennings has been more in on the unemployment bill that just had its hearing last week. Actually, at the beginning of this week, I believe that it is possibly coming up for a vote next week in either the House or the Senate. This would help with that and make sure that that rate is changed to a degree where that does not happen for businesses, because that's going to destroy the future of the state's economy.
Killer right there.
Yeah, it's definitely. So there's definitely hope. That's one of the things identified in the Economic Recovery Task Force that I talked to you about last week. That was like priority one, to make sure that that gets addressed right away. So we should see some resolution soon.
Now, I know we don't have much time, but I mean, if the unemployment fund is that bad off, this is going to have to be a huge financial package. Are Republicans going to go along with this?
Well, I think there's really a lot of agreement when it comes to the unemployment insurance tax for businesses. Everybody wants to make sure that there's help. And one thing I want to point out to everybody, I asked Representative Macri about this yesterday. Look, we've heard about the gas tax, right? The capital gains tax proposal. Taxes, because all of this stuff is going to cost money. But one thing that she stressed to me, because I said, you know, people are in a panic because we're in a pandemic and the economy. And she said, just because all of these things are out at the beginning of session doesn't mean they're all going to pass. And she stressed that all lawmakers, regardless of party, are being very thoughtful about what people can handle at this point when it comes to this kind of thing. So
good. Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthwest.com.